The following program is a presentation of Grand Slam Ministries.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome to episode 63 of the Dan Scott Show. I am Dan. As always, we are presented by our 501c3 nonprofit Grand Slam Ministries. Thank you for spending your time with us on this weekend, Saturday on the Life FM and on KLNG in Omaha and everywhere else on Sunday, both around this country and internationally, thanks to our affiliates in Paisley, Scotland, and Cape Town, South Africa. Wherever you are, pray that you've had a great week, and we look forward to spending the next hour with you. And you folks know me by now. I believe that every time we bring one of these shows to you that we've got a good one for you. But every so often, there's one that I believe has the potential to be extraordinary. And I think this is one of those because of where our guest was in life compared to where he is now and how I believe that his story is going to resonate with many of you out there, either because of what you're going through personally or because of perhaps what a friend or family member has gone through. But our guest is Red Martin, and he is a guy who has an organization called Sunday Dinner with a Twist. And every Sunday, he and his wife, and with the help of some volunteers, they cook a full dinner in Greenville, South Carolina, and serve it to over 200 homeless people. Why does Red Martin do that? Well, God has made that his mission field because not all that long ago, he was one of those homeless people living a life that was racked by drug and alcohol abuse, suicide attempts, psychiatric hospitals. It's just an incredible example of what we talk about here all the time, the radical, life-changing, life-giving grace of Jesus Christ. When we come back, you're going to hear the story of Red Martin from Red himself. And I promise you, you'll be riveted to your radio or your phone or whatever device you're listening on. You don't want to miss this. First, a word about Grand Slam Ministries, and then we'll be back with Red Martin.
Every day, there are children who leave school on Friday and eat little, and sometimes nothing, until they come back to school on Monday. It happens in every community, including yours. Many of these children live in circumstances that deprive them of basic needs necessary for a quality life. At Grand Slam Ministries, we want to change that. We want to invest in our children, giving them hope for the future. That investment includes necessities such as food, clothing, school supplies, and a safe environment to play, to study, to live. Please visit our website, GrandSlamMinistries.org, to find out more about our ministry and how you can help. We're just getting started. Will you come alongside us for the children's sake? Again, that's GrandSlamMinistries.org.
Follow us on social media. Search Grand Slam Ministries on Facebook and Grand Slam for God on Twitter. And don't forget Dan's personal and public figure sites on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You're listening to The Dan Scott Show, presented by Grand Slam Ministries.
Episode 63 of The Dan Scott Show, and we're just getting things underway. Our interview with Red Martin is coming up in just a second, but I want to tell you, as I try to do somewhere in every program, that if you've missed anything or you want to find out more about who we are and what we do, then you can go to danscottshow.org access the affiliates and archives page. It'll take you to the podcast site where you can listen to all of the previous episodes on demand. There's some bonus information there, bonus material via my SoundCloud. GrandSlamMinistries.org is a page at the DanScottShow.org website. All the info you need, how to contact us, everything is there. And on the front page, there's actually a little tab that says Listen to the Radio Show. If you click that, that is going to take you to the Dan Scott Show TuneIn radio channel, where all of our previous shows are airing in pretty much shuffle mode. So you may hear one from 2 weeks ago, and then it may be followed up by one from 8 or 9 months ago. But the TuneIn radio channel, I don't talk about that a lot. I need to push that a little more. Just Dan Scott Show, and all of their shows are airing there as well. All right, let's get into this week's interview. Red Martin is just a phenomenal story of God's redemptive grace. And it's also a story that if you ever think you're too far gone, you're not. If you think you've waited too long, you haven't. And I really can't do it justice. So I'm going to let Red tell his story and just prepare to be, I would say, shocked and amazed by what you're about to hear. Here is Red Martin introducing himself to all of us, and away we go, our listeners.
Well, my name is John Red Martin, and I go by Red Martin. And so today, who I am is a man who has built a relationship with God, a man who has not ever had one until I met my wife in 2016. And my wife is a big part of who I am today. I met her while I was homeless, living on the streets. And she took me in, and she just changed my whole world and taught me about grandma's love.
And we're going to talk about the journey that led you to the streets. And then, as we're going to see, as we love to do on this show, the redemptive power and grace of Jesus Christ, because he has made made your life turn around 180 degrees, hasn't he?
Yes, sir. I tell people all the time that if somebody wrote a book about my life today, they would sell it way short, because there's no way anybody could write a life like I have today.
Well, you know, it's funny. You and I have a mutual friend in Steve Duggan. And yes, I was talking with him yesterday, and he just flat out told me, he said, 15 years ago, if you'd have told me that Red would be doing what he's doing now, he said, I wouldn't have believed you. And I would imagine, from what I've heard, there are quite a few people who would have had the same response.
Yeah, a whole lot of people.
So let's give people an idea, and I want to go back to how you got there. But prior to coming off the streets in 2016 and developing that relationship with Jesus Christ, what was your life like? What were you doing at the time?
Well, I suffer from a mental health issue. And I also, to deal with that mental health, I used alcohol and drugs since I was 13 to combat that mental health.
And you're how old now?
I'm 56.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And I grew up in, do you want me to just go ahead and tell you?
Just go.
Okay. So I was born in Key West, Florida, and I was a little freckle-faced little kid, never felt like I fit in anywhere. And I just had impending doom on my life. And at the age of 7 was the first thing that turned me away from God, is when my little brother drowned and my dad tried to save him. He fell in the water and hit his head, and my dad tried to save him. And I blame God, and I blame myself for some reason. And this is just my perception, that I thought my parents had blamed me as well, because my dad was an alcoholic. And he, after my little brother died, he became abusive. physically and emotionally, and just he was a good man and he was my hero, but he was always drinking. So I only saw the part of drinking. I only saw that part in him. And so when my little brother died, we moved to Key West, Florida. I mean, we moved from Key West, Florida to Columbia, South Carolina. And when we moved to Columbia, we moved down by my grandparents. And then my dad found work in Sumter, South Carolina. And that's where me and Steve Duggan became friends. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going through life really just thinking everybody's blaming me. Me not feeling like I fit in anywhere. And at the age of 11, I was molested by a babysitter. And I went and told my parents that I was molested. And I thought they were sending me back to her, just not caring what happened to me. But after working through life and working on some things, I found out that my parents never sent me back. I was going back because I was a little 11-year-old boy enjoying what was happening to me at that time. Mm-hmm. And so after that, the God thing was completely out the window. At the age of 13, I took a drink of alcohol, and I could have took a drink way earlier than that. I needed one way earlier than that. But when I took that drink at 13, it took all those insecurities on the inside and just took them away. And I could numb myself. So when I started numbing myself, I found out two interesting things at that time. If I could drink, I wouldn't feel. And then I found out at that time that if I put a mask on and I could make you laugh, you wouldn't know how I felt inside. Because if you knew really how I felt inside, you wouldn't want to hang around a guy like me. And I tell people either I had to drink or put the mask on. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 14, I woke up one morning, me and my dad, like I said, he was my hero, even though he was who he was my hero. I woke up that morning. He told me he never felt this good a day in his life. And then 2 hours later, he had a massive heart attack and died. And so here I am at 14 years old. My hero's gone. I don't feel like I fit in. So I just started running at that point and going to places where I thought people felt like I did.
Right. So let me stop you here for just a minute, because yes, I want to go back to something you said a moment ago when your brother drowned and you said you felt responsible. What made you feel responsible for that? Were people blaming you, or is that something you put on yourself? Explain that to me a little bit.
Well, at a young age, I remember probably since I was 5 or 6 years old that I didn't fit in. So I felt like it should have been me. It shouldn't have been my little brother. It should have been me, because I was the person. My brother and sister got all the good attention because they were good kids. And I got all the bad attention because that's who I was. I was a bad little kid. And that was the only attention I felt like I was getting. So I just ended up being bad. And I just felt like it was my fault. Mm-hmm. And it should have been me instead of somebody else.
That's an awful lot to put on yourself at such a young age.
Yes, sir. And even when my dad died, I even said it then after that morning when I was told, I ran away for that night. And that's all I talked about to a friend of mine was, it should have been me. It shouldn't have been my daddy.
We are visiting with John Red Martin. He is known primarily as Red on this week's edition of the Dan Scott Show. So that happens at 14 years old. Your dad passes away. You were already on a, we'll call it a path of destruction. Maybe had just started the walk on that path. What did that moment do to you?
When my dad died, you know, God took my hero away. And then I had nothing else. I had nobody else after that. That's just my perception. Mm-hmm. Now, my mother is a loving woman, and she did everything in her power to steer me the right way. But my mind was already fixed that God didn't love me. I didn't love me, and nobody else did either. And I didn't really deserve their love anyways.
So you'd taken your first drink at 13. This happens at 14.
Yes, sir.
What were the next steps? How quickly did you go down that path?
I went pretty fast because, like I said, I started hanging around people who I felt like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started hanging it out in those places where you just drink alone and you drink, you know, you just drink to not feel.
Right.
And so I go through high school and I'm the class clown. And, you know, like I said, I found out at an early age, if everybody could see me, I can make somebody laugh. You wouldn't see me cry. And so that mask was put on a daily basis because I figured if you really knew how I felt, you wouldn't want to hang around me. And that was one of the key things in my life. So I did a lot of things that, you would want to hang around me because I was the fun guy.
Mm-hmm. What was there nobody in your life, a best friend or anybody in your family that you could confide to that you could share how you felt?
No. You know, my dad was the type of man where he would tell you, you don't cry. You're a man. You don't cry. And we grew up in that kind of phrase, men don't cry. And I had nobody.
Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest tragedies that has taken place in the lives of a lot of men of a certain age and generation. And I think you and I are in that age that's what we were taught, that you don't cry, you don't show emotions, whatever you're feeling, you just compress it inside and you go on about and do what you're supposed to do, quote unquote, as a man. And I think that we have seen far too many examples of men who have taken that pain and turned it into exactly what you're talking about with your life, trying to find some way to deal with it because we didn't feel like we were supposed to talk about it.
Right. And, you know, I always felt like I was burdening people. If I told somebody about it, it was a burden. It was like, here's all my problems.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody should fix it. And that would be too much of a burden for you to fix me. Help me.
So all through high school, you're drinking and you're masking all of your pain with being the class clown. Man, this sounds so familiar to me. when did drugs start to come into the picture?
Well, I took my first job at the age of 16. It was around 16, 17. I was a street pharmaceutical representative. And
yes.
So I took that job and I was introduced to a lot at that time. And so I did the marijuana stuff here and there. I didn't like it the way it made me feel. I liked the alcohol. I loved the alcohol the way that made me feel. But I didn't too much like the marijuana. But so around 17 was my first drug. And then I graduated high school. I went to 5 years of high school. And it was a funny thing because my niece, she graduated from Clemson. And she looked at my transcripts one day and saw that I was 246 out of 257. And she said, Uncle Red, them other 11 people must have been really dumb.
And
I said, no, baby, they just didn't apply themselves like your Uncle Red did. And that was the first time I knew my mom could throw a shoe.
Yeah.
so
and as we know, mothers can be deadly accurate with those things too, can't they?
Yeah, she was pretty good at that. But so, you know, after I graduate, my mother told me, you know, she was straight up. She always told me the truth. And she said, you can do one or three things. You can get a job. And she said, you're lazy, so you're not really going to get a job. And she said, you can either go to college. And she said, she just told me straight out. She said, you're too dumb for that. Or you can go into service. And so I went straight into the Navy. That's what my dad was in. And like I said, that was still my hero. Even though at 14, when he died, I was mad and angry at him for leaving me.
Yeah.
But he was still, I still had that. He was still my hero. And so I went into service and nothing ever changed in the service. I was still the same person. I did the same things I was doing in the streets. And after 2 years, they asked me to leave. And so I left. And at that time, and I'll tell you a couple little stories like that'll end up showing people God's love at the end. When I was in the service, I got a young lady pregnant. And when I got out, I went to jail, and I got out of jail. And my mother told me that we went to court. My mother told me that the girl had gotten married and I needed to give up the rights to my daughter because that was a good man and he was raising my daughter and I would never be a good father. And so at that moment, I gave up the rights to my daughter. And that was another excuse that I could drink more. Mm-hmm. After that, you know, here I am. I'm a piece of junk. I couldn't stay in the service. I'm not a good daddy. I had to give up the rights to my father, my daughter. So now I can really drink and escape. And at the age of 24, I think it was 24 years old, I was introduced to crack cocaine. And crack cocaine took me down a road that I never thought I'd go down. And it was a dark, dark road.
I want to explore that road in just a moment, but I hear you talking about your mother and the things that she told you. Did she think that she was telling you these things out of love? Was she doing it out of anger? I mean, what was your relationship with your mother like? Because just listening to it, Red, it doesn't sound like that she was being very loving toward you.
Well, in all actuality, I thought she was loving me more than anybody ever could love me because she was actually the only person telling me the truth.
Uh-huh.
Because at that time I couldn't have been a good father doing the things I was doing. And I wasn't going to be good in college or I wasn't going to get a good job. And so I kind of looked at it as, she was just telling me the truth, what I needed to hear. And then that turned into her being my biggest enabler at the end.
And which maybe we can go down that road as well. But where did crack cocaine take you?
It took me to a lot of treatment centers, jails, and to the home, being homeless. I never, like, I tell people all the time, about mental health and drugs and alcohol. You know, I couldn't, when I was 5 or 6 years old, the teacher asked what I wanted to be when I grew up. I never said I wanted to be an alcoholic, drug addict, suffering from mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And crack cocaine took me to those places that I never thought I'd go. And it didn't make me do it, but I did things while on it that I never thought I would do because I come from a good family. My mother taught me good values. My mm-hmm. father taught me good values when I was little. And I never thought that I would do those things that I did.
Are you
stealing and the lying? And
I was going to ask, are you willing to share some of those things?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. See, when I got on crack, I'll give you one instance that I've tried to work through some amends. My nieces and nephews woke up one Christmas with nothing under the tree because their uncle stole all their Christmas presents the night before to get him some crack.
Wow.
And that's stuff I don't feel good about it, but I've tried to work through it by making amends at the end. And I hope they can forgive me for those things. But I will tell you, I don't do those things when I'm not on drugs and alcohol.
Where were you at your lowest?
My lowest point that I can remember is I was homeless down in Myrtle Beach, and Steve found out. He got in touch with me and said, hey, why don't you come live with me And I went and lived with him. And I'm at Soxty High School. He got me a job as a teacher's aide with the handicapped children, the kids with Down syndrome and all that stuff. And that was the best job I ever had. But the only thing about it is I took me with it. Mm-hmm. And nothing in my life changed. The kids were making me feel like I was the best thing in the world. But inside, I didn't feel that way. So I never changed the drinking, and I stopped using for a little bit, but not the whole time I was at Soxty. March 23rd of 2000, I was staying in the pool house of a gentleman in Myrtle Beach, and I had lost a job at Soxty, and I drank for like 2 weeks before that, just drank straight and trying to numb myself out. And on March 23rd of 2000, I went in that man's house and stole a gun, and I started walking down Cinema. I walked all the way from Surfside to Cinema Twins Park, and I sat in that park. And that whole time before that, I was walking down the beach just crying, asking God to help me, because I knew when I stole that gun that one or two things were going to happen. Either God was going to help me or I was going to shoot myself. And so I went down to Cinema Twins Park. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I sat down on that bench and I cried. And I put the gun to my head and I tried to pull the trigger, and I don't know what it was, but I had the gun and I was trying to pull it and it wouldn't go off. So I was getting even angrier at God, because here I am, I want to kill myself and you won't allow me to do it. And so I put the gun down and I'm crying, and I like to describe it as my tears were coming off my face and they were hitting the ground, and it sounded like bombs were going off. So I didn't even realize if God was sending me a message, and I don't even really know if I wanted to hear the message at that time, because I had reached a point in my life where I just wanted to die. And I had tried numerous times before that to try to kill myself, and this time I was really going to do it. And then I put the gun in my mouth, same thing happened. And the next thing I know is I put the gun to my chest, it went off, and I ended up in the intensive care unit at the Grand Strand Memorial Hospital. At that morning, it was March 23rd. My mother was at the house. They called her and said, "Hey, your son just shot himself. We think you need to get up here." And, she said, "Well, what you want me to do about it?" And hung the phone up. And for the next 56 days in the hospital, I finally really knew what loneliness was. Mm-hmm. I thought I knew loneliness, but when nobody ever showed up, no friends, no family, nobody showed up for those 56 days, I finally felt loneliness. And what that turned into was anger. Mm-hmm. And I was mad at everybody. I was mad at all my friends. I was mad at God. I was mad at, and I never looked at me. I looked at why y'all didn't come. Here I am at my lowest point, and nobody showed up.
Well, as we know, and the reason you're on this show is I was going to say God showed up, but God was always there. But we're going to get to your recognition of that here in just a little bit. We are visiting with Red Martin. He is the guy, if you're familiar with Greenville, South Carolina, he does what's called Sunday Dinner with a Twist. And we're going to talk about that, because it's a great outreach for the homeless in our area here in the upstate of South Carolina. But just continue the story. So 56 yep. days in the hospital, nobody comes to see you. So you've got all these other issues, and now you're dealing with this anger that yep. is misplaced, but was yep. real at the same time. So what happened then?
So when I got out of the hospital, they sent me to Greenville, South Carolina, and that's when I moved up here. And so that was in 2000, and I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm sitting in a meeting 90 days in, And this old man is, he's chairing the meeting, and he calls on me and he says, "Do you want to share?" And I said, "Yeah." And I started sharing and I started crying. And I said, "Sterling, the only thing missing in my life today is a pistol." And from that morning on, that old man loved me more than anybody that I could ever imagine. He loved me when people told him not to love me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would go into rooms and they would talk about God, and I'd see God working in their life, but I never thought I deserved God's love like that. I never thought he was working in my life. So for the next 6 years, I was in and out, in and out, ending up in homeless, being homeless, ending up in treatment centers. And I started in about 2005, I started getting a little belief that God might be working in my life. Things started getting better. I'm getting some things happening good in my life. And then my mom was up here in Seneca, and I had over a year sobriety at that time. And my mom was in Seneca at a baseball tournament. My little nephew was playing in the Dixie Youth World Series, the state championship. And then I was able to go over and talk to her, and I asked her, me and her were by ourselves. I was sitting at the pool with her, and I said, "Mom, why didn't you come? Why didn't you come on that morning?" I said, and she said, "Well, let me ask you this." She said, "Do you know what it's like when your phone rings and your heart drops?" Because I didn't know if it was you calling for another 500, another 1,000. I didn't know if it was the drug dealer saying, "If you don't bring us some money, that we're going to kill your son." I didn't know if it was the police or the hospital calling. So she said, when she knew where I was at for those 56 days, she finally answered her phone. And I felt like crap. Yeah. I was hurt. But me and her got through it. And I'm thinking we're going to build this relationship from then on out. 2 weeks later, she goes to Grand Prairie, Texas. The team is out there at the World Series. She comes down the elevator and has a massive heart attack and dies. And so there goes that God thing completely out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Now you done took my mama. And here I am. I was just getting that relationship with her, and I felt good about it. And now she's gone. And when that happened, that anger I talked back about before, it multiplied. And I was mad at everything and everybody. And so I couldn't get sober, because I just wanted to die. I didn't feel like I deserved to be here. You know, my mom was a great grandmother. She was a great mother. She should be here. Why couldn't it be me? Because mm-hmm. I'm worthless. So I lived like that until 2016, when I met my wife. In and out, in and out. And that day I met my wife, it was April 24th, 2016. I was working at the Greenville Drive, homeless. I was driving a 50cc moped, and I was working in the team store. And she walks in the store, and we immediately become friends. And I didn't have anything, a pot to piss in. And matter of fact, she would buy me food and bring it down to me. During days, she would come see me. And so I'm sitting in the team store. We're becoming friends. She's looking for a jacket that we were supposed to have. I knew we was never getting the jacket in, but I kept telling her we may get it in tomorrow.
Yes.
So she was working at the concession stand at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a couple weeks go by, I don't have her phone number, and I'm still trying to think how I'm going to get her phone number. And so one day I'm going up to the kiosk to work in the kiosk, and I saw her and I called her over. I said, "Hey, if we have that jacket in the kiosk, I'll call you and let you know when you can come get it." Well, I said, I need your number to do that. And when she gave me the number, we've been calling each other since. And not too long after that, I just knew that God put her in my life for a reason, because she was a phenomenal woman. She loved me like nothing. And we were only friends at first. Mm-hmm. And then I got my nerves up one day and I said, you know what? I think I love you. And she said, I think I love you too. And then from then on, you know, for the first year that we were together, I tried to push her away because I still had that mentality of, I don't deserve this.
Right. Visiting with Red Martin here on this week's edition of the Dan Scott Show. So there's a positive relationship, obviously, with Cassandra, who has become your wife. But the most important relationship is the one with Jesus Christ. So when did you throw all of these other things away? When did your relationship with Christ happen? When did it become real?
Okay, well, Sterling called me over one night and he said, hey, you're going to have to work these steps and you're going to have to get through this program and work these steps in your lives. And so I was ready because I didn't want to lose my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if I didn't, I'd probably lose everything again. And I didn't want to lose her. So I started working the steps. And when I got to step one, it was easy. My life was unmanageable. And when I drank, it became unmanageable. And I could believe that. But the step two part where it says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I had been sitting in meetings wanting to kill myself and kill other people. So I said, God's never going to restore me to sanity. And he broke it down and he told me that that was not what the step meant. What the step meant was that, oh, my wife's walking in the door now. So, but the step meant that if I took a drink after admitting that I was powerless over that drink, that's the insanity that we're talking about.
Right.
And he said, we're going to get to the God thing next. And so he knew I still had a hang-up about God not wanting anything to do with me. And he calls me over the next day and he sits me down and he says, hey, this piece of paper, I want you to write down how many times you've been to jail, how many times you've been to a psychiatric hospital, how many times you honestly tried to commit suicide, and how many treatment centers. So, and then on the bottom of the piece of paper, he had me write down how many friends and family members do I know have died of this disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. So my numbers were 32 treatment centers, 8 psychiatric hospitals, 6 times in jail, and 5 times I honestly tried to commit suicide. And on the bottom of the piece of paper, I had 8. And so I wrote it down and I was just going to slide the piece of paper back over to him. And something came over me and I get chills when I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to slide the piece of paper back over and something said, pick it up, read it. And I picked it up and read it. And I started crying. I couldn't stop crying. And I'm bawling my eyes out. And I realized that God had been there every single time, because I should have been number 9 a long time ago. And when I saw that on paper, there was no denying God anymore. It was on paper and I could see it. And since that day, you know, even though I have some hard days sometimes, because I do suffer from a mental illness and I do not have the drugs and alcohol to deal with that mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I have hard times, but I realize that God is going to fix it. And my wife taught me that love of God through her grandmother. And that's where I built this relationship with God. And I started building that relationship. And it's a God of my understanding. And it's me and him get mad at each other. We laugh together. We cry together. And it's kind of like my relationship with my wife. It's, you know, she gets mad at me. I get mad at God. And at the end, both of them are right,
happy wife, happy life, right?
Yeah. Happy God, happy life.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we've got 6 or 7 minutes left, and I know that there's so much more detail we could go into, but I wanted people to get the gist of your story here. So God has done this miraculous work in your life. He has kept you from your own hand 5 times and all of these other vices that you've had. And now you have become known for what I mentioned a moment ago here in the upstate of South Carolina, Sunday dinner with a twist. Tell our listeners about that, what it is, how it came about, and who you're serving.
Well, me and my wife, you know, she's a loving person, and she knew about my story, and we decided to go help some guys at the Turning Point and give them some food because they were new and they didn't have anything. So we're out there sitting in the car after giving the guys some food, and she says, well, they're living in a hotel. How do they eat? And I said, well, they cook everything on the grills because they didn't have stoves in the room. And she said, wow, what they're missing is grandma's kitchen, grandma's cooking. Every Sunday, you can go to grandma's house, no matter what you was going through.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma always had Sunday dinner. So we put that concept in my life story together, and we made it Sunday dinner with a twist. And we go out every Sunday and we cook them a home cooked Sunday dinner. And my wife, she's an amazing woman. I mean, y'all should be talking to her instead of me, but she goes in and she cooks in our kitchen, and our kitchen is no bigger than a jail cell. And she goes in there and makes meals for over 200 people. And so we do this every Sunday. And, we also have like a church, Northfields Church. They help us on the third Sunday. And then Heidi and Aki Henry of Harvest Kitchen has now recently, because we started 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
they have recently started letting us use their kitchen on Sunday because they're closed. So my wife is able to go down there with them, and Grace Church comes out and cooks a meal for us every once in a while. And so we're getting more cooking in the kitchen now, in a commercial kitchen.
And you say that there are every Sunday there were 200 homeless people that you feed?
Yes, sir. We started off with 75, and now we're up to 200. And we go out and feed them every Sunday. We have fed over 53,000 plates in the 6 years that we started. We keep a count. And because I always said, told my wife when we started, I'm going to catch McDonald's one day.
I like that. Let's leave that reference alone, and some people will get that. I like that, Red. That's good.
Yeah.
Do you get a chance to have people or yourself or somebody share the gospel with them?
Yes, sir. And that's one thing that we do different. We feel that Jesus wants us to love everybody. And if we love them, we hug on them, and we love them, and we listen to them, we can get the love of Jesus to them easier than going out and preaching at them and telling them they can't eat until they learn a Bible verse.
Mm-hmm.
So we go out, and when they want to pray, we pray. But we have two slogans, and one of them's love with no stipulations. No matter what you're going through in your life, we're going to love you. And each one of the homeless people that we hand a plate to, they also get my number. And they call when they need something. And we try to get them into treatment centers. And during the week, I get them their clothes washed and get them some food during the week and take them to doctor's appointments and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, we try to do it that way. And they know the Bible more than we do.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people do. A lot of people do.
Yes,
it's just taking the head knowledge and turning it into heart knowledge. How do you pay for all this stuff? Because it's not cheap.
No, it's not. And we have some donations. We're looking for monthly donators. That way we can put it in our budget that we know we're going to get this every month.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're looking for. And then, you know, my wife is a big God person, and I'm a big worrier. I worry about everything, and she'll tell me don't worry. But like, I'll watch her cook, and I'll say, "Honey, we're not gonna have enough green beans," and she'll say, "Stay out the kitchen. I got this." And then we have too many green beans, and it's like God just fixes everything for us. And it's an amazing thing that how we see on a daily basis God's love for us and love for others.
So, Red, if people want to find out more about Sunday Dinner with a Twist, if they want to donate to help your mission, how can they do so?
They can go on SundayDinnerWithATwist.org, and we have a donation button there. And then, can I tell one more story?
You can tell as many as you want.
Well, I told you the story about my little girl, and I wanted to tell you how much God truly showed me He loves me. Mm-hmm. So we're out feeding one day, and we run across a young lady. She's under a bridge. She comes out, and I hand her a plate, and she's just scuffing the food down with her hands. She's not even using the utensils. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she said the rats had ate the food off her chest the night before, and that she was real hungry. Mm. And her and her boyfriend were there, and I took her boyfriend to the side, and my wife took her to the side. And my wife comes over to me after we get back, and she says, "Hey," she's 5.5 months pregnant. And both me and my wife started talking, and we said, "No, she's not going back under that bridge." So we put her up in a motel for a month and a half. We made sure she ate every day, new clothes, made sure she was clean. And my wife would take her to her doctor's appointments and get all her medicine for. And then on September 17, 2020, she called and asked if we were going to help with the baby. And we said, "Yeah, we got everything y'all need for the baby to come home with you." And then the next day, I was going to Sumter to feed where I grew up. And my wife called and said, "Hey, you need to turn around and meet me at the hospital. We got papers to sign," because the young lady and the baby and the boyfriend all tested positive for drugs. And if we didn't sign to be kinship caregivers, they were going to put him in foster care. So me and my wife go up there, and we brought Sam home that Sunday night. And Sam's been with us since he was born, and he's 3 years old now. And what I think God did, and we're in the adoption process right now for him. What I think God did was He allowed me to go through everything that I went through in life. And He told me at the age of 53, He's got a sense of humor, that it's okay to be a daddy now. And He gave me the opportunity to be a daddy to not only Cassandra's kids that she had in a previous marriage, but now I'm a father to baby Sam. And that's truly God's love for somebody like me. And so I can't deny it anymore.
And isn't that a great way to finish that interview? None of us who have been redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ can deny God's love for us. But Red Martin, what an amazing story, and just can't thank you enough for sharing it, your vulnerability. And again, if you want to help and find out more about what he's doing with Sunday Dinner with a Twist, you can go to SundayDinnerWithATwist.org. We need to take a break. Speaking of helping, as we go to break, listen to what is coming up, because it will tell you about how you can help us and a new campaign we're beginning to roll out. And then we'll be back to put a final exclamation point on episode 63 in just a moment. Here at Grand Slam Ministries, our goal is to share the love of Jesus Christ through multiple platforms, while at the same time executing our core missions of mentorship and helping children in need. The primary way we can effectively do all of those things is through The Dan Scott Show, our weekly Christian radio show that airs in multiple markets around the nation and the world. We are asking you to partner with us to not only sustain what we are currently doing, but to grow both our on-air and online presence and our ability to fund those core missions. Can you spare as little as $25 per month? How about $10? If we can get 200 partners to join us at each of those small, sustainable levels, we can begin to accomplish everything we believe God has called us to do. So can you help us today with a donation of either $25 or $10 per month? Go to www.grandslamministries.org to donate, to get more information, or to ask questions. That's grandslamministries.org. And thank you for supporting the Dan Scott Show and Grand Slam Ministries.
Like what you hear? Have a question or comment? Maybe a guest suggestion? Drop us an email and let us know. Dan@danscottshow.org. And now, back to the Dan Scott Show, presented by Grand Slam Ministries.
A little less than 4 minutes before we have to wrap up this 63rd edition of the show. And once again, our thanks to Red Martin for sharing his incredible story of redemption with us. I mean, did you catch some of those numbers toward the end of the show? If you want to talk about being given multiple chances by God, Red was in 32 treatment centers, 8 psychiatric hospitals, 6 jails. He tried to commit suicide 5 times, and he knew 8 people that have died of substance abuse. And he told me, I should have been number 9 a long time ago, but God had different plans for Johnny Red Martin. Just an incredible, amazing story. And thank you again, Red, for sharing that with us. As we get set to wrap it up, looking ahead, we have the story of Javis Austin that we'll be doing in a couple of weeks, a former college football player who 25 years ago shot himself in the head, tried to take his own life, and failed. Or did he? And we'll talk about that with him and what God has done in his life. That's coming up. The story of a man who has gone on to heaven now about 5 years ago, named Bobby Dobson, and the testimony that he has and the lives he touched. And then also excited about a pastor friend of mine who I've never met personally, but I feel like I know personally because I read his devotions every single day. Michael Moran is a pastor of a church in Connecticut, and we're going to talk about his faith journey and some of the things that he has personally overcome, the loss of a son, and just a few months ago, the church building burning down. And yet his faith and what has continued to happen in a positive way in the church and the area where he serves. It's an amazing story. I'll just say this as we get out of here. God is continuing to bring guests. He's continuing to bring these stories. I know that he has his hand on what we are doing here. I know that he is going to continue to provide for us. I believe he is going to use some of you to help in that provision. So you heard what we talked about in that last break. We are trying to get 200 people giving $25 a month, 200 people giving $10 a month to get some sustainable income so we can continue to get our airtime paid for and expanded and start working on funding and rolling out these other core missions. God's also going to lead us to some people who can make a significant difference with the single stroke of a check. I believe that. But that's on him. My job is to just be faithful, continue to do what he asked me to do, and hopefully he'll put it on your heart to help us one way or another. DanScottShow.org. You can do all of that there. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Dan. God bless you, and so long, everybody.